Hello, and welcome to Revolutionize Your Love Life. Do you want to know more about love relationships, what makes them work, how to create the one of your best dreams? Do you want to be in a really healthy, juicy love relationship? In these podcasts, we will give ideas and practical advice to light your way. Whether you're looking for a love partner, already in a relationship you wish could be better, or leaving one that has run its course, there will be something to inspire, empower, and support you. Revolutionize Your Love Life is a fortnightly podcast where you will access the knowledge and wisdom of love experts and relationship coaches from across the world to help you find true fulfillment in love. I am your host, Heather Garbutt. Welcome. Hello, everybody. I'm here today with the lovely Melinda Jacobs. She's based now in Arizona, Cottonwood, and has moved closer to Sedona to follow her heart. Mm-hmm. She's an amazing woman, and we're going to talk about beyond the mask and navigating neurodiversity in love. Welcome, Melinda.
Heather, thank you so much. That just brought tears to my eyes. I just immediately started getting emotional. How lovely. Thank you for having me today.
Let me explain who you are to everybody. So she's a clinical hypnotherapist, trauma-informed health and life coach, a spiritual leader, an author with over 30 years of experience guiding individuals through life's challenges. This includes emotional pain, uncertainty, inner struggle, and she leads them into clarity, healing, and meaningful inspiration. Her trauma-informed, spiritually grounded work helps people move beyond their subconscious blocks and repeating patterns to reclaim their wholeness and live with purpose. Melinda draws from years of training in hypnotherapy, addiction counseling, it could be addictive, meditation and metaphysics. She supports lasting transformation, resolving the past, restoring self-trust, and deepening intuition while realigning with one's true essence. She's also an ordained minister with certifications in hypnotherapy, regression therapy, cellular release therapy, yoga, and more. And she empowers others to embody the life they were always meant to live, beyond trauma and beyond limits. You are truly a gift to the world, Melinda.
Thank you, Heather.
So let's talk about navigating neurodiversity in love, masking, and what's underneath all that, all the unprocessed trauma, including developmental trauma, and how it shapes the way we show up in relationships, especially for neurodivergent individuals.
Yeah, where do we start? How about how I found out that I was autistic? I think that's a fun place to start.
Sounds brilliant. Perhaps
my whole life, I always knew I was different. And there was this profound efforting to try to figure out what's normal. How am I supposed to act? What am I supposed to say? You know, just constantly scanning the room and watching everyone else and mirroring and mimicking what they're doing, because they seem like they're okay and they seem like they fit in. And if I could mirror that, then I'm going to be okay. And so my whole life was that. And then there's all these other clusters of things and struggles and hypersensitivity and high intelligence and seeing into dimensional spaces that really never came together like the puzzle pieces. It's interesting that the autism logo is the puzzle piece, right? Mm. So there's all these different aspects. And my daughter, a tattoo artist, was tattooing someone who was going to a private school in Denver for psychology. And my daughter at the time had shaved her head. And they were having a conversation about that, and the client asked, why did you shave your head? And my daughter's response would be mine as well, because I had abhor the feeling of hair on my face. And so that just brought in all this curiosity. It's like, oh, have you ever considered that maybe you're on the spectrum? And so through the conversation, this client gave my daughter an online test. And as I was hearing that, I thought, can I have that test? Can I see that? And so I took this test, and it really looked, the questions were like, well, that's just trauma. Like, those are the same symptoms that would come out of growing up in a trauma environment, which I did. And so I'm like, all right. And then I took the test again, more through the lens of, well, I'm highly sensitive. I'm an empath. I can feel my environment. I can feel trees and feel whether they're happy or not. And I got the same score. And so I took this test multiple times, trying to do it from different angles of my life. And it took me down a rabbit hole. And then I got to this one test about masking. And this is where my heart broke, because on a scale of 25 to 175, I scored a 169. I am that good at hiding all my autistic type signs, signals, giveaways. And I realized in that moment, Heather, that I had no idea who I was without the mask. And I really look back at my own personal history of relationships, and it's a bit of a dumpster fire. It's just a row of ongoing struggle and trauma and frustration and meltdowns with no context as to what was happening for me. And it was only in my last relationship, who he too was on the spectrum. He was dyslexic, and I was starting to have more and more meltdowns. And he's like, "What's going on?" Like, he was curious. For the first time, I was with someone who was curious about what that was about and why this was coming up. And so I went through more and more on online tests, and I finally, for my own satisfaction, went through the formal diagnosis process with someone who's a diagnostician, and did all of that. And ultimately, in that moment of receiving my diagnosis of level one autism, ADHD, also high anxiety, depression disorder, eating disorder, and also, just all of these things, that's where all the puzzle pieces fell in place. And I'm like, oh, all that randomness came together under one definition that changed my life in an instant, and at the same time, didn't change anything. Everything changed and nothing changed. So there's my story.
It's very beautiful. So, from that, if you look back and you look at other people that you've worked with, what are some of the common relational patterns you see with people who've experienced trauma, who are neurodivergent? What are you noticing?
There is such a dysfunctional people pleasing, trying to accommodate everyone else with complete disregard. And actually, it's not just disregard, it's almost an absence of knowing what I, the individual, need in the moment, because I'm so busy trying to make sure that they're happy and they're okay and everything is in order and everything is in place. And all the while, without realizing I was doing that, I'm also creating more and more internal tension and stress. And so then becomes the patterns of miscommunication, the tension struggles that can come into a relationship, because now the nervous system's getting dysregulated and I'm trying not to have meltdowns. And so controlling, lots of controlling behavior, but definitely that dysfunctional codependent people pleasing with an absolute disregard for knowing one's own needs. That's where I would go with that.
Hugely powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you discover? How can our partners better understand and support, or support each other when neurodiversity is present in the relationship? What would be good to be and do?
Practice grace, first and foremost. I think that now that I understand myself better, and this really goes beyond, you know, for the neurodivergent individual, this goes so beyond. It's like, this is just good advice for anyone in relationship. I know you know this, but to really know yourself, to know your past, to recognize your growth edge of your ability to ask for what you need, to understand your style of conflict, how do you manage conflict? And for me, I can't speak for neurodivergent people because we're all so different. You know, how autism shows up for me is going to be completely different for every other individual with autism. And so it's really about being patient, being kind. And for me, what really touched my heart in the last relationship that I had was that curiosity piece. What's going on? And he actually genuinely wanted to educate himself. And that meant more to me than, it was such a loving, kind gesture. So I don't think people are going to get it right straight out of the gate, right? That's not going to happen. But to hold that intention of help me understand you so that I can support you in a way that really serves you. I remember one time early in our relationship where I had just had a really challenging session with a client. And I can sit in people's darkest spots and not flinch. I can just know the truth. That's what I do. I can see all the patterns because of how my brain's wired. But this particular session really rattled me. And I came out, he was preparing dinner, and he really got, I was rattled. And what I loved is that he stopped. He put the knife down. He got very still. And he said, "What do you need?" And in that moment, I was heading towards a pretty significant shutdown where I can become unresponsive. Like, I can't speak. I can't communicate. And he caught that. He caught that I was having a hard time communicating. And so he gave me three options. Simple options. Do you need food? Do you need a hug? Do you want to go sit on the couch? And that was like, there was this light bulb that happened in that moment because of the simplicity of the offers. They were not overwhelming. And each one of them was really, I mean, this wasn't intentional, but they were designed to help me regulate back to where I could communicate. That was beautiful.
Yeah, so he really was patient. First of all, he informed himself. Mm-hmm. First of all, you informed you about the style of neurodiversity that you have, mm-hmm. and will help you and what wouldn't help you. You've got a deeper understanding of who you are and what you need to begin with, which is mm-hmm. great. Secondly, he was curious and he educated himself. And thirdly, he was attuned to you. So he was watching for when you're triggered to become frozen in this case. And he knew that three simple things would really tune into you. One of those would do it. Didn't overface you with lots of choices, was very still and calm, and in that way, emotionally holding. And then asked you, so all you had to do was go. You didn't have to speak or anything.
And I think that through that journey of learning how to navigate my neurodiversity within relationship itself, what was really powerful and what had happened in most other relationships is there was this shaming piece. Like, what's wrong with you? Why can't you get yourself together? Like, come on, you're a grown woman, like pull yourself together. Like, there wasn't that shame piece or that judgmental piece. And one of the kindest things after I was diagnosed, and this was during this current relation that relationship, we met with a friend who had an autistic daughter, and he was just sharing what it's like to be the parent of someone who's autistic. Her challenges were more significant than mine. I can manage myself most days on my own. And this is what he said, and it touched me in the deepest of places. He said, "There's no shame in needing help getting regulated." Because my whole life, once that dysregulation happens, it can be a slippery slope to where it does slide into, I really cannot in that moment get myself regulated. And so to have someone just sit next to me and just slow their breath down, have someone dim the lights for me, have them turn off any other sounds to, put that weighted blanket around me. Like, those simple little things can get me back to center where I'm like, I'm good, I'm fine, and we're laughing again, and everything has moved and passed. But that one statement, there's no shame in needing someone else's help to regulate you. Wow, that was a gift.
That is absolutely massive because I don't know how I experience our culture, and I know we're slightly different, but is that independence is viewed as not needing anybody, whereas I actually see it as independence is knowing that you are interdependent. We're all connected together and we do need each other massively.
I think that I love that, Heather, because I think there is that sweet spot of recognizing, yes, I can take care of myself. No, I'm not a victim. No, I'm not helpless and powerless, that I am responsible for myself. But part of that responsibility is to know myself and to know myself to the degree at which I'm like, ooh, I'm going down a particular path, and I know where this is going to go, and I need to resource myself. And some of those are internal resources, and some of those are external. And I think that's for the health of the relationship as well, is that when each individual is really monitoring and managing themselves, and they are their first line of support, I myself am my first line of support. And when that breaks down, then I can go to the next and the next and the next and start moving outside of myself. And I think that oftentimes we're just not taught how to be in that self-independent, self-resilient, self-empowered place without going to the extreme of, but that means I can't ask for help outside of myself.
I think there's a really important skill to learn, which is self-soothing, and particularly if you've had traumatic early life, you probably haven't had help to soothe and regulate yourself. And that's really basically what we mean by regulation, is calming down, being centered and grounded in a kind to yourself state of mind.
I've created so many different courses for highly sensitive people and for people on health journeys, and my most recent one's called The Missing Ingredients to Mindful Health. And it has everything. It's about adding what we need. The very first class is, How do we add something to our experience that soothes the nervous system that's not food? How do we learn to calm this nervous system down in simple ways? And my favorite is just the simple rocking and padding. Because when we're doing this, the padding on the chest, so it creates a thump and the rocking, we're eliciting cellular memory because the body remembers a heartbeat when we were in the womb. The body remembers floating in water when we were in the womb. So both of those combined can just quickly recenter, reground, get the nervous system into a state of regulation where we have access to this prefrontal cortex and we can think again.
Yeah, this is beautifully described. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I wonder if we can just develop a little bit on this, that we've talked about neurodiversity, and you and I have talked about it as a form of developmental trauma. Could you just expand a little bit more on that so that that's in the picture too?
I remember sitting down with my diagnostician. It was on Zoom, and going over the results, and I don't think I really appreciated how challenging my life has been until I saw it through her eyes. She said, "Being neurodivergent in and of itself, in a world that's not built for people to be neurodivergent." That in and of itself is traumatic. You know, people, especially women, because, and this is why so many women are going under the radar and undiagnosed, is because we have a deeper need for community and fitting in. And so we will mask more than men generally would. And so a lot of people slip under the radar and are diagnosed late in life. And she was talking about not having this diagnosed is in and of itself its own trauma. And when I looked back, like all those puzzle pieces that I was talking about in my life, it didn't make sense why the eating disorder. I mean, I could point to a number of things, but now I've been told that, at least in the US, when someone presents with a with an eating disorder, the first thing clinicians are asked to do is give them an autism test. Oh, that would have been nice when I was 20 years old going into an eating disorder unit rather than when I was 53. That would have saved me years of struggle and confusion. And so I think that's part of the trauma is number one, the sensitivity. And to be dismissed as, oh, you're just being sensitive. When certain sounds to me feels like razor blades across my skin, where certain lights feels like a spear is going through my head. I am not being dramatic. That's what it feels like.
It's searing, yes.
And to be dismissed and to be shunned and shamed, it's like, oh, you're just too sensitive, and nobody bothering to adjust the environment. This last relationship, it was kind of fun because neurodivergence was such a big topic between us, and so we were able to accommodate a lot of each other's own sensitivities. But one of my sensitivities was is I'm very sensitive to vibration. And so I lived in a loft, and so the bedroom was, you know, it was a, there was a space underneath it, and so the floor vibrated a little bit more than if it was on a floor, on a main floor.
Ground
So when
concrete.
he walked, it's like the whole bed shook. And so here I am trying to relax and I'm just being shaken. And I'm like, oh, come on, I please softer, softer. So these little things add up over time. And without knowing it, without realizing it, we end up living in a dysregulated state. which means we're constantly in survival mode, which means our nervous system is in fight or flight or freeze all the time. I mean, this sounds dramatic. This is dramatic because I have some clients who are living in Israel right now. And so they're constantly in the threat of the bombs and the war. And so there's this really bad tension in the air. So their nervous system cannot relax, right? I wasn't living in a war zone, but that's the example. My nervous system never got to really relax.
So you could be as tired as you liked, but you were still wired and alert and vigilant.
Right. And so I think that is really feeds into why it's so the ongoing micro traumas. I kind of like that word. It's like the death by a thousand paper cuts. It's just at some point the nervous system just gives out. And so I know the statistics for adults with autism, the suicide rate is very high. It's much higher than neurotypical. And I believe it's because there's just a breaking point where the noise, the tension, the sense of, it's just too much. And if our partners, if our families are not willing to make any adjustments, I get how someone would say, I just can't keep going on like this.
Yes, we can't live with that torment.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Did I answer your question?
No, I think we've been on a big loop there. I suppose I'm looking at the trauma, because there were questions. Years ago, I did some training and they said, neurodiversity is a thing in of itself and it's not about traumas. I don't believe that. No.
I can tell you I do not agree.
No. Do you think in some ways that the neurodiversity develops as a consequence of traumas?
No. I believe wiring is wiring. And so I believe that neurodivergent nervous systems are neurodivergent nervous systems. Trauma amplifies it and can heighten some of the specific sensitivities. But I don't believe that it's developed environmentally. I believe it is how the individual is wired.
Right. All right. Okay, good. That's good to get clear.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about the sorts of therapy that you offer that can really help with the trauma and the calming of the nervous system.
So, through my own need to survive in this world, I've kind of been on a long journey to learn and grow, as my CV shows, lots of different trainings. The one that I think that has helped me the most, excuse me, is cellular release therapy. It's done in a relaxed state, and it can speak, the facilitator speaks directly to the subconscious mind of the client. And what I love about this process is that the person does not have to be in the feeling state, in the memory of, in order for this to work. I also love this process because it really takes into account the depth of trauma that we hold cellularly. And so when I explain this process to people and the fact that we're tapping into memories, for example, based on my experience feeling misunderstood, I can ask my conscious mind and I can come up with many examples and many memories of that. But cellularly, I am holding generational memory from my ancestors. Epigenetics shows that trauma is passed down through the DNA coding. And so there is information right here within my own being that's not of my own experience. And depending on where people are on the fence, and I move about past lives, it's like, is that, am I making this up? And then there's times I'm like, no, I absolutely have memories from past life experiences. And so is that my soul's trauma memory that I'm holding? Is that my ancestors? And what I say is the facilitator is like, don't know, don't care. The subconscious can't identify all those memories. And this is a permission-based process, which I love that as well. And I ask the subconscious, can you, the subconscious, release and clear these? It will make a calculated decision based on the individual, whether they'll be more safe, stable, and functional or less. Because I'm not interested in destabilizing anyone, especially in the world today. And I see it happening a lot with hypnosis, and it just makes my skin crawl a little bit when people say, oh yeah, I quit smoking 1 hour and I stopped smoking. And I'm like, how much weight have you gained since? How's your spending habits? How much time are you spending online now? Like, where did that habit go to? Because it's going to transfer in some way. And with cellular release therapy, we really go to the cause. We ask the subconscious, where did this go? And we ask the subconscious, can you release and clear it? We're not just going to rip away what I consider a skill set that's keeping the person safe, stable, and functional at this level. Because if you rip away the whoopee, the house of cards will fall and the weight will come on, or the spending will go out of control. It will squirt out the side somehow, some way.
Yes,
so that's probably another, one of my favorite.
Sorry, it will come into another addiction.
Absolutely. Yeah. Transfer of addiction.
That's brilliant. So for somebody who's feeling stuck in relationships right now, in repeating relationship dynamics, inside themselves and externally, despite doing all the inner work, all the therapy they've done, what would you suggest as a first step?
I think really looking at the messages that we give ourselves, and to really recognize that even though in the past someone may have said, what's wrong with you, Melinda? I probably have repeated that to myself 1,000 times over. There's something wrong with me. And so I think that gentle, kind, compassionate exploration of what messages am I telling myself about this, or about my lovability, or my ability to even have a healthy relationship. So that gentle exploration of those messages, and start telling yourself something different. I am lovable no matter what. We all have our own individual needs. Mine are just as important as anyone else's. I deserve to be seen, you know, things like that, to just begin to shift and change that inner dialogue is really important. And then to be curious about what's a healthier way to communicate, what's a healthier way to meet my needs, what are other ways to soothe my nervous system, what, you know, come up with a menu of things that help bring you back to center. And to really recognize that all the effort that you've done to get yourself where you're at was worth it. And just because there's more work to be done doesn't mean you're a failure. So again, there's that messaging, right?
Absolutely. It means you're equipped to do the next bit.
Right. And just like the universe, I love to look to nature. I'm looking out my window because I have nature outside my window. I love to look to nature because nature shows us the universe is just expanding. and expanding. And so we are a reflection of that. And so I am a constant work in progress, and I am just expanding and expanding and expanding. So this idea that there's some magical end to all of this, that I'm going to get to the finish line, is ridiculous. That's why I like that term growth edge. It's like, you know, here's where I am in my growth edge. And I'm ready to just kind of nudge myself and encourage myself and love myself into my next greater expression. Is it going to still be a little messy? Oh, yeah. I have autism. It's going to be messy. So that's what I would recommend.
That's lovely. And can you share with us where people can find you? I'll put everything in the show notes, and perhaps you could also give us some places to go for good assessments.
Oh, I will be happy to give you my list. Thank you for asking that. I have a whole list of online assessments. And again, you know, they're not the official diagnosis. And sometimes that's enough, right? It's just like, oh yeah, I can see where, and, yeah, so I'll give you the links for the online assessments, but you can reach me at M for Melinda, V for Valeria, Jacobs, mvjacobs.com. And then you'll see all sorts of things that I do. I work with people individually. I have group coaching. I offer coaching programs, and soon I will be having a live retreat here in beautiful, beautiful Arizona, helping people develop their intuition and, again, just connect to themselves in a more magical way.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Thank you so much, Melinda.
Thank you, Heather.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Revolutionize Your Love Life. I'd like to know what has been your biggest takeaway from this conversation. Do take a minute and share this with us, and visit us on our Facebook page. You can connect with me personally on my email at heather@heathergarbutt.com. If you can think of someone who will benefit from listening to this podcast, please do share it with them. If you have any feedback on how I can improve it, please do reach out to me, as I'm always keen to learn more. Thank you so much again for listening, and we'll meet again on the next episode of Revolutionize Your Love Life.